Hey, this is Lucas Reiter, executive producer and writer of number 65, Miles McGrath. You're listening to The Blacklist Exposed on Golden Spiral Media.
One thing you'll never find between the hosts of this podcast is symmetry. Welcome to The Blacklist Exposed. I'm Agent Troy Heinrichs.
That hurts. I am Agent Aaron Peterson, and I'm here to let all the wonderful ladies in our audience know one important thing. I can cook, too.
I'm telling your wife.
Apparently, that gets you a lot of favor in this world.
No doubt.
Thanks for joining us this week as we discuss number 65 on the Blacklist, Miles McGrath, which aired October 6th, 2016. It was written by Lucas Reiter and directed by John Terlesky. Show notes and other intel for this episode of The Blacklist Exposed can be found at theblacklistexposed.com, where there'll be a nice cooking video of me.
I cannot wait to not see that. We asked you to answer our profiling question of the week last week, which was, what will be the consequences for Red's decision as it relates to Kaplan, because we can say that now, mean? Why don't you go first?
Well, Bill Stefan, that's what I'm going to say, Stefan, it might be Steven, but I'm going with Stefan, says Kaplan joins Tom on the Blacklist Redemption. I think that's actually a possibility, and I'll talk about why later.
And it is Stephen, but that's okay.
Was it Stephen or Stefan?
Steven? I don't know. I think it's Bill Steven.
I don't know. There's an A in there. It's like throwing you off, man. It's just kind of like jabbing me a little bit. Like, you don't know.
All right.
Maybe he's French.
Maybe. Judy Miller said, regarding his attempt of killing Kate, I have no freaking idea. She may become one of his greatest enemies. I could see how that could be used in the show for some great episodes. Mm-hmm. But I just don't know. Some think Red missed her on purpose and has some other plan for her. I don't really think so, but I can't see how Red missed killing her. He's an expert shot. Someone said perhaps the bullet hit the metal plate in her head, a great theory. Mm-hmm. If so, then he truly tried to kill her, which I think is true. And then, does she become a real thorn in his side moving forward?
Yeah, I don't buy into the whole he missed her on purpose theory. He shot her in the face. That's a hell of a miss.
Yes, we can confirm that the shot was in the cheek. There was a bullet hole wound, thanks to people that posted those wonderfully graphic pictures up on the Facebook group.
Yep.
If you zoom
good on
in,
them. Yeah. Good on them. Hello, 10 o'clock.
Yeah, if you zoom in, you can see the bullet hole in her cheek. So I have a theory on the shot. We can either do it now or we can save it for later.
I'll save it for later. Let's get into it.
All right.
Marta Bolden, I believe Red intended to shoot Kaplan. That sun flare altered his aim slightly. So she... Well, sometimes we put a lot of thought into this, don't we? She will stay out of his way once she heals. She was ready to give her life for helping Liz and the baby, so I doubt she will do anything reckless to get back at Red. She'll be acting from the shadows to do what she has always done. The show may make it look like she's turned rogue, but we'll find out she's doing it for the sake of answers and Elizabeth's and Agnes's safety. How easy this will be for Kaplan depends on what friend or foe finds her in the woods.
Scary dogs found her, that's for sure. Wendy said she knows Red's contacts. She knows how things are done. So she could try looking out for Lizzie and Agnes from afar. I know her plan went belly up when she faked her death, but she had a very small time frame in which to do it. So mistakes were made. The only thing is, I can't envision any one of Red's contacts will want to assist her in fear of retribution. Yeah, what's up with that, Dembe? However, I do see her becoming a silent boss and leading Tom on the trail for Agnes. She could very well go over to Scotty's team, which will make Red's toes curl even more.
There's lots of people thinking this is going to lead to redemption. All over the place. All kinds of redemption. Brandon Perrell, I suck at names, Brandon, but just know I'm thinking of you. Kaplan still believes what she did was right. She paid for her betrayal, so her loyalty to Red is now on her terms. She will start to work from behind the scenes, leaving Red confused as to why he's one step behind for once.
That's an interesting story.
Yeah, I like that.
Deborah Jean said, I think Kaplan Red's storyline is going to play out like Red Riding Hood. The show loves its children's stories, the big bad wolf living out in the woods. He'll be in the form of a survivalist, probably save Kaplan, then turn on her. He may not even be saving her. He may be dragging his dinner home. Red and Dembe will go to bury her and find her body gone, save her from a big bad wolf. I believe this will happen in episode 4 because of the title and description of that episode, Eco-Terrorists. Greek goddess of the earth. Red will want to bury Kaplan, that or Liz talks him into it. Red and Dembe are the only two who know where she is, and Dembe isn't turning on Red. After that, I believe they'll actually start to mend through a shared betrayal. I believe Kaplan and Red were betrayed by the same person.
What? Interesting. And lastly, Kim Malam Cameron. I think the lyrics to the song playing when she shot Kaplan, when he shot Kaplan, explain it well. About a ghost from a wishing well and a castle dark or a fortress strong. I don't know. Should I sing this? I don't, with chains upon my feet, you know the ghost is me, and I will never be set. This is awful. So free as long as I'm a ghost that you can't see. Kaplan's main objective. Shut up. That was beautiful. Kaplan's main objective was to protect Elizabeth and her child, and that won't change. She will probably be the ghost unseen that keeps Red at odds.
I like that theory, actually. It does fit in with the Gordon Lightfoot song very well.
And I do, too. Do you want me to start the song over? I mean, I can.
Gordon Lightfoot is sacred.
About a ghost from a wishing well. All right. Well, this week's question, what was Katarina so sad about in her last clip?
Yeah. That's interesting.
Maybe she wasn't, because maybe just Liz was on some kind of opium.
Oh, because she's crying because it's Liz's memory of her crying?
Because it's not a memory. It's just, it's an imaginary ideal.
That's
so
true.
It's not really a memory. So maybe she isn't really sad. Maybe that's just what Liz envisions. You know what I mean?
Gotcha. Okay. We'll have to talk about those dream sequences in a bit. But before this podcast really goes off the rails, let's discuss this week's case profile.
Okay, we meet number 65, Miles McGrath, as he orchestrates his taking of the infectious disease samples by breaking into the Savannah Utility Authority and causing a citywide blackout. Seems extravagant, but you find out why later. Because that basically enacts their protocols to move the samples out of that area, and then they basically hatch a train heist to get the samples after those samples are evacuated. What McGrath does is he incubates in crime. I've never actually heard that term. Apparently it's a term. Didn't know. And what he does is, since he became filthy rich, he likes to do things, I guess, with his time. He doesn't want to be bored. So he invests in crime and orchestrates the results.
That's right. And apparently he's not that rich, because he would have invested in Red Reddington a long time ago.
True. So what did you think, just initial thoughts of this Blacklister in terms of, well, maybe just the episode overall and the Blacklister as a whole?
It's cool. But I like the Blacklisters that actually get their hands dirty. This guy was kind of acting from afar. So from that, it kind of seemed like it was kind of a washout a little bit. And then he left them alive at the end, which was kind of weird. Mm-hmm. So, and that gets into that whole code of Red only kills people that, quote unquote, deserve it, even though he completely shot the bodyguard for no reason next to him. So I don't know how that plays into it. Why would you leave the bad guy alive and just shoot the harmless sidekick? That seems weird. But anyways.
He might need him down the road, you think?
It could be.
Mm-hmm.
But as for a Blacklister, not the most exciting Blacklister so far this series.
I disagree. I actually really liked him. I thought he was a very cool Blacklister. I like the idea that he's filthy rich. See, I'm the opposite of Troy. I like the guy who orchestrates from afar. I like the guy who is the puppet master. That kind of stuff really intrigues me far more than the guys doing the job. Not because I think they're better. They're just more interesting because, wow, they never even do any of the work, yet they are behind so many things. And I just like them because I hate them more. I just hate them. Like, you can't even do it yourself, and you're telling everybody they're doing it wrong. It just drives me nuts. But so that's why I really enjoyed him. And he's filthy rich. He's a strategist, complete sociopath. I really enjoyed this this Blacklister. Red knows Johan Hallebeck, who's part of the crew Miles was using to steal his samples, and apparently Miles kills his brother, and the guy still goes through with the heist. Now, I'm just letting you people know. You kill somebody I consider my brother, and I am not going to continue with my heist. I'm going to call the whole thing off. And, you know, I mean, if you take out Troy, I'll still do it. But, you know, somebody that I'm really close to.
Well, the thing is...
just kidding.
So mean. But the thing is, he wants to keep continuing on with the heist, because if he continues on with the heist, that keeps him close to Miles so he can get his revenge.
Right.
So that's why you keep going through with it. You don't just cut ties completely.
It's true. This is true. Well, they basically, Red knows Johan Hollebeck, so he helps him get Tom. He gets Tom in there, and that gets Johan busted, which is sad. I really kind of liked Johan. He seemed like a sweet and loyal criminal. Would you agree?
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the crux of that portion of the episode. This is, once again, this is one of those where it's kind of centered around finding Agnes, finding Kirk. I mean, everything's kind of still centered around that. At any point, are you concerned with how the government is spending their resources?
Abso-freaking-lutely.
I'm starting to think I understand why we have so much wasteful spending in the government. Because we're spending all our money trying to find Liz and Agnes, I think.
Well, and this is the crux of this episode, is it's not so much stealing this virus from the CDC. It's the whole concept of the episode structures around Kirk and mm-hmm. the fact that he has this disease and he needs some way to cure the disease or prolong his inevitable death. And that's what really ties it all together, is that he needs this specific virus to counteract his illness, because right. he lost the one person that he thinks can save him.
No, believes. The word that was used.
Yeah, he believes. We think can save him.
Yeah, that's an interesting. I like the phrasing. I'm letting you know, if I ever get in a TV show, now I get why TV shows don't hammer people for the questions, because if they answered everything right away, nobody would watch the next episode. I totally get it. Writers are doing what they have to do. Get it. If it was me, I'm Liz, I would have tackled Red and started beating the snot out of him until he said, "Who is my father? Son of a bitch. What do you mean? Bam, 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 bam." Didn't happen. Maybe it'll happen in episode 8.
So is this where you want to talk about the episode overall?
Yeah, I mean, this is overall. We're going to get into the characters, but sure. Like, I actually enjoyed the episode. I thought it was a fun episode. I thought it was kind of like a filler. But we did get a lot of details on the behind the scenes of Liz and Red. And I think we are getting those answers. I mean, they're parsing them out a little bit, but we are getting them.
Or did we?
Or did we? That's true. we learned this week that Liz apparently can read fluent Russian. Didn't know that. Or she's, I couldn't tell if she was actually using like a Google Translate or something, because she did have her laptop open at one point.
She did.
Yeah, so maybe she's translating.
Yeah. The episode was, like you said, I felt filler as well. It wasn't anything that was super exciting. I don't even want to get into the fact that Kaplan's stuff was cool from an audience perspective, but really makes me even more angry that they showed the stupid promo last week, because they're just
still mad.
Nothing came of it, right? Like, why did you waste all that time spoiling her being alive? Because then that would have added, again, so much more emphasis on this episode when she was alive. And then to not show the person dragging her, not to actually have her do anything this episode except roll around and put her face in the water. Kind of a letdown a little bit after the big cliffhanger last week, I think. Overall, I think the Miles McGrath character was, you know, good, but it wasn't like fantastic or anyway. The best scene of the entire episode was for the first time, I think you're kind of excited that the Keens are working together, was the Danny Ocean heist scene.
Oh, that was really good. Yeah. And we're going to talk more about that in detail, but I had a lot of fun with that. And I think we got a little taste of what redemption would be like, too, with the train heist. And Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And those parts about it I loved. The mythology part of the show, that part was a little flat for me. And I don't know if this is they said that this is where we're supposed to start getting answers. And if this is the way they're going to give the answers for the show, I'm a little disappointed, actually, to be quite frank.
Now, are you disappointed because of the fact that these are things we already kind of guessed?
Not so much that we already guessed. I think the delivery, the execution of them seemed way too simple. And I think that's where I'm kind of struggling with this episode this week. Is it really an answer? Because if it was a big answer, you mm-hmm. don't just give it to you in a diary. You know, that seems kind of like, it seems weird. It seemed for 4 seasons, you would assume
too
the
easy.
Answer
it was
would,
too easy. Yeah,
it was just, hey, here's the answer. Here you go. Thank you.
I get what you're saying. But again, on the flip side, we've been saying, hey, give us something, give us something, give us something. So, I mean, there is a flip side to that. So it's, you know, we say we want answers. They got to give them to you. I mean, that's a quicker way to deliver them, as opposed to I'm going to hunt somebody down and beat the answers out of them or something.
I'd rather see them beat the answers out of it, because it is 10 o'clock.
And that's from her mother herself. So, I mean, that's directly from the source. Although Okay, the only problem I have with that delivery system, this is me personally, the only problem I have is that if you're a spy, right?
Why do you document your stuff?
Why do you document it in a journal? That's about the only thing that I could say to that.
And of course, this is the journal that was found at the Summer Palace that Kirk was inhabiting. So could all of this just be written as coy for Kirk still? And none of it is actually true. Because if I'm
That's true. Now that would make sense why it would be in a journal then.
Right. If I'm Red Reddington and I've been doing everything I can for 3+ seasons to make sure, Liz, you don't know the truth, and now you have a journal that literally spells it out in front of you, he would act much differently when he comes into the room at the end of the episode. Like, you shouldn't be reading that. Don't read that. Oh, don't read that, because he doesn't want her to know the truth. And he just kind of stands idly by and said, yep, every, you know, Rostov has had this issue, had this disease, there was his uncle with the Rabowski virus, blah, 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 blah. He never references Katerina in those conversations at all.
Right.
So which leads me to believe that the entire thing is complete misdirection still coming from Katerina. And that's what I hate, because Eisendrath said that, right? Like, no matter what they put on the screen, we're never going to believe these guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think it works. And, you know, we're not poo-pooing the episode. I actually thought it was kind of fun. But there were definitely some issues with it. Let's move into our music.
Yes. Our character, starting out with the one we all love the most, is the tunes. We start off the show this week with Yadnis from... It's actually 3 exclamation points.
All I heard... You did that, and all I heard was... Oh,
yeah. Ferris
Bueller.
Nope.
Sorry.
Yadnis from... as Miles' team does their best black ops impression to take out the local power station. Later, Scotland Yard detectives stake out Miles, where we hear Christopher Blue's You Got What I Like on the radio. In the best scene of the night, Elizabeth and Tom play their best version of Danny Ocean, as I said, to the tune of Bongo Fury by Sean Lee. And last but not least, we conclude with Harrison Brome's Fill Your Brains, which is exactly what Samara is doing when her head explodes over Aram's marinara date, and Elizabeth as well, as she learns about Kirk's blood disorder.
Oh, yeah. Go Aram, man. play gonna play. Okay, and by the way, Bongo Fury, whatever it was, that was fantastic. It really did emulate Danny Ocean.
100%. Like, I want more heist. I want more heist stuff.
Yep, that was very, very cool. And I liked how Liz played fake Liz, like old Liz. Like, she played up her old, weaker personality, like before she got to this season or the end of last season. You know, she really played that up, and I thought that was very cool, both for fans and for people that have complained about that character before. And I think that was really funny. Let's move on. We'll get into that a little bit more in detail, but first, let's hit the characters. Kaplan, she's alive. I don't know if you're surprised, Troy. Were you shocked by this development?
Flabbergasted. I couldn't believe it.
I was taken aback.
Oh, no, I wasn't. Thanks, NBC.
So bitter. So bitter. And most people, here's the thing. Most people didn't even think she was dead that I talked to, but the promo kind of did ruin it for a lot of people, because there was a lot of debate until they saw the promo. So... what are you going to do? What are you going to do? It's over now. Who do you think is dragging her? Because basically a dog finds her and then she's being drug out of the woods. Do you think it's someone she knows, or do you think it's just some random passerby?
I think it's some random passerby.
Do you?
Well, Red specifically said, like, no one's lived on this land. No one's walked on this land in, like, forever. And I just bought this 1 acre. So it's just some guy living out in the woods. I can't believe it's connected.
You don't think so, huh?
I'm sure he'll probably end up being a blacklister and someone will come save her eventually. But yeah, at this point, it's just some rando with his dogs.
Let me ask you a question. Did they show a face?
I never saw a face.
Yeah, never saw a face, huh? So it kind of makes it seem like it'd be somebody that we would recognize if they didn't show a face.
Right.
Unless it just wasn't in the budget for one more guest star. I guess it's possible.
Yeah, or setting up future storyline to be like, oh, it's that guy.
My idea was maybe it's Mr. Solomon. Maybe he's been tracking, you know, he survived after Tom shot him last season. And so he's been tracking Reb. He sees that, and he sees it as an opportunity. And maybe that's how Kaplan leads into redemption.
I don't find Solomon to be the hiding in the woods type.
Not hiding in the woods, following them. And then goes after, tries to find her after. That's just an idea.
With a pair of dogs?
Hey, it was an idea. It's called having a theory, Troy. You can't be the only one that has stupid theories. That's my theory.
What would have been great is if they hadn't killed Stanley Cornish, the Stewmaker, because remember, he had his dogs out in the woods. Would have been great if this would have been Stanley Cornish again. That would have been fun.
That's awful. No. No, this poor woman's already gone through hell. She doesn't need to go through any more. So what do you think about that bullet wound? It's going to leave a nasty little Bond villain scar, you think?
It absolutely is.
Looking forward to seeing how that plays out. And again, I still want her to go against Red. I'm going on record. I want her to go against Red.
Thanks to all of the internet detectives out there. Appreciate that.
Yeah, man, there are a lot of people debating where she got shot. And I've seen so many screenshots of that up close. It's boggled my mind. Fantastic, fantastic work. I thought we had Batman on the Blacklist Exposed team there for a minute.
Yeah, yeah.
That's about all we got from Kaplan, which is why Troy's still super bitter. And I mean, Troy never gets mad about stuff. He was legitimately mad about this. I think it's pretty funny. Because I get mad about simple stuff.
And I was mad about the promo. I was animated about the rest of it.
Right, right. I totally understand. And I hope people understand, he's not mad at the show at all. He was just mad at the marketing team, and he still is. I don't know if he's getting any better about it. Dembe, not thinking he likes audiobooks. That's about all I got from him.
Not thinking he likes Kaplan either.
Why do you think that? Because he's cool with her getting shot?
Yeah, just left her sitting there. Like, she leaves the car, doesn't come back to the car. And he's clearly, I'm not going to go help her.
Who signs his checks? That's what I would say.
Exactly right.
Mm-hmm. I would go with the guy that signs my check. That's his job. It's what he's paid to do. Now we move on to Aram. Sweet, sweet Aram. That first moment with Liz. I'm so glad you're okay.
Aram, you didn't. Adorable.
Did you get a little misty?
Oh, yeah, totally. Like, is he going to hug her? Is he? Oh, he hugged her. Okay, we're good.
Mm-hmm. That's the way you break somebody back into the post office right there. That'll do it. And you're right. Aram adorable. Hashtag Aram adorable. Symmetry, I like that little moment. He totally wanted to make out with her. How did you feel about this issue with Samar where, you know, and he's telling Liz, I don't hate you, Liz, but I do hate what you did. So he admits that, but he also feels like Samar's being too hard on her. How do you feel about that dynamic?
I absolutely think that that's the correct response. I don't think that you discussed it with us. I don't think that you talked. You should have let us in on the game, right? We're your friends. Let us in on the game. We could have helped you. Almost like what was really great is it's symmetry in Red's code in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
So not that Aram would go to the killing side. He's the nicer guy, and that's why he can forgive versus kill. But it's the same code. Like, why didn't you trust me? You should have trusted me. I could have helped you, kind of thing. So I like that in the way that Aram approached the reunion with Liz.
Yeah, I did. I did too. I was really surprised by Samar's reaction once Liz was there. I kind of thought it would be one of those things because the last episode, she was very more laid back. And then this one, you know, more like was coming to grips with she hoped she was okay. And then this one, she was back on her stoic, okay, you're okay, I'm going back to piss off mode. And that's what I got from this episode. So I really like the balance between her and Aram. I really like that Aram kind of put that off kilter a little bit. And then we get the final scene, which Aram, more like a damn, am I right? What a playa. Playa gonna play. Cooks dinner, and he has some woman, some very, very attractive woman, come in and just strip butt naked while he's trying to feed her. It's like the perfect date, really, when I think about it.
Well, what's great about that is that she seemed like some kind of runner or something. So he's on his bike, she's running side by side. It's like a perfect match.
Well, I'm sure that's where he met her. I'm sure. But that seems like poor timing. That's what I wanted to say. I just said it all wrong. It seemed like very poor timing because this is also the moment where Samar calls him because she's getting ready to hit her request to transfer. She hasn't done it yet. She's thinking about it. She's not really sure. And because she's really hurt about what Liz did. So she calls Aram. And I think Aram could have talked her off the cliff, but he's too busy with Fitness Girl. And yeah.
So does this finally cement that Samar does have feelings for Aram? Because I'm sure she called him because remember, they're just friends. And I'm calling my one friend, my one confidant, the person I can always talk to. Doesn't mean she has feelings for him.
Yeah, it does.
And then when she hangs up, then it means she has feelings. Well, no. When she hangs up, then it solidifies that she does have feelings for him.
Yes.
Because if it's just friends, you wouldn't do the hang up and send the email.
Yeah, if it's just friends. Oh, is that a girl? Oh, okay. All right. I got to go. Bye. Because she was all ready to come over and hang out and taste some of his delicious whatever the hell
marinara,
he was making.
Pasta.
Marinara. Yep. Mm-hmm. And then just didn't pan out. She heard that Fitness Girl was there, who has a name, but I'm kind of going Fitness Girl for the time being. So that's what we got. I really liked it. I thought it was very, very interesting. And I'm curious where they go with Samar's character. Maybe Cooper won't approve it. Maybe he'll say walk it off. Maybe they'll refuse it for some reason. The question I have about this transfer thing is to you, because you remember the deets. She was like placed there because of Red.
Thank you. I'm so, like, how can she get a transfer? She doesn't work for the FBI. She's there on special assignment, task force, appointment, or whatever you want to call it. So mm-hmm. How could she get a transfer? She should just go back to Mossad. I'm done
here.
So
what do you think? What do you think that means?
I have no idea. That perplexed the crap out of me, to be quite honest. She works for Red. Red put her in there in season two. Like that, it just doesn't compute. I would go back to Red and I'd call Red and be like, hey, Red, I can't work here with Liz. You got something else for me? That's the first, mm-hmm. I think that's the phone call I would have made. The transfer seems like we forgot all about the fact that she was placed there by Red back in season two.
Right. That's funny. Anne Hase is the actress who played Elsie on
Elsie,
The Blacklist.
Yes, Elsie.
Or Elise.
Yes.
So I can't just call her Fitness Girl, but I'm going to stick with Fitness Girl because I just think it's cute and she was adorable. And she, once again, I've never had a date start off that well in my entire life. Have you?
No, never.
Well, I mean, you've been married for most of your life, but you know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? Everybody had a young wild in the college days, so to speak. Okay, so moving on to Wrestler. Once again, didn't get a whole lot. Breaks the rules and lets Liz and Tom take some files to look through, even though that's breaking the law. So he does bend the law a little bit. Well, actually, that's breaking it.
Occasionally, yes.
Mm-hmm. And he does make sure to point out, you lost your security clearance, Keen.
Well, she lost the security clearance. She's not even an FBI agent.
Right. Well, that's not wrong.
She was a consultant. She's not even an FBI agent.
Yep.
So I thought that was interesting. And the fact that Tom can just walk in, like he was a consultant. When did he get put on the payroll? I don't get that either.
I mean, they're obviously, he gets a little bit of a pass. He has a guest pass, is what I'm guessing at this point.
I'm a little concerned for our security, you know, capabilities of our U.S. government at this point. Anybody can just walk into the post office and hang out and look through some files. Here you go.
I do got to say, this is one of those episodes where I was questioning our government quite a few times. I'm like, okay, so Tom, a known basically terrorist almost, is let into the building, no problems, and they devote a lot of resources to finding the child. I get it, it's part of the show, but it was, come on, you have to admit it's kind of laughable that our government would allow all this.
Yeah, this isn't a place like your, you know, Starbucks or corporate office where your spouse can come visit for the day.
It's so funny. I still had it's TV. I kind of let a lot of this stuff slide, but that was very, very funny. And he does acknowledge that Tom's pretty good. I like that. When mm-hmm. he kind of gives Liz that little look, he's like, he's good. And she's got that, I know. That was pretty. That was a cool moment.
They made up. No more garden gnomes will be flying.
Well, I think Wrestler seems to be the one that understands the most, don't you think?
Absolutely.
I mean, he seems to be the most, hey, I get it. You weren't trying to hurt us. You were just trying to save yourselves. I get it.
Which still totally confirms for me in my head that he was in on the plan. Because there was still that person that Kaplan talked to on the end of the phone before Red got there at the disco pregnancy delivery room. And then Wrestler's not crying when he comes up to the van. So it almost like he knew Liz was going to die.
Because
if I'm your partner, then I think you would break down, at least shed a tear, one tear, because it was his partner.
Are you asking me if I would for you? Is that what you're asking me?
No, I know you wouldn't.
Okay. Well, then you see, he's very stoic. Maybe he manages his emotions.
Okay. You would totally cry, though.
Out loud? No, I wouldn't. No, I'm a man. I'm going to throw that sexist card in there. I'm a man. Men don't cry. No, I'd bawl like a baby. Yep. I would. I would curl up. I would probably get in the fetal position and just roll around on the floor for an hour.
Everybody knows I would, because I was like that last week.
You sure would, until you got all angry. Cooper, moving on, because a lot of this was just really the three or four main characters. Cooper orders eyes on the ground in London, which ends up getting a couple detectives killed. That, to be fair, that was a good plan. It just didn't work out.
The thing sometimes I loved about it, is it was very much Red and Cooper season one relationship. Like, mm-hmm. Cooper, I told you not to get involved, and you got involved. See, this is what happens when you don't listen to me. I like that from that perspective, for that scene.
Have you noticed that Cooper, these last two episodes, has been getting really feisty?
Yeah, he's very, like, hey, do your job.
Mm-hmm. Keen, get on the damn phone and find out why. Yeah, he's just, I mean, he is, and he's even scolding Red to a degree. I think he's got a little more pep in his step. He's pissed.
Agree.
Okay. Kirk, we find out he has a plastic anemia. It's a failure to produce bone marrow, apparently. And he says to Red, I am the better man, always have been. Ouch. That hurts. Maybe not, because apparently your wife was hooking up with Red, you know what I'm saying? So,
Which if you believe the journal entries, then yeah, he's like, hey, I'm a better man because you didn't even know you were being duped by a Russian spy.
Well, he was still with your wife, fool.
Yep.
So you're both dum-dums as far as I'm concerned. He also says, I'll die before you ever hold my granddaughter again. He keeps throwing granddaughter out there, so he must believe it. Sure seems like he believes it, because I keep hearing the word believes in my head.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think about Kirk this episode? I know he only gets really one scene, but he's bandied about quite a bit. What did you think?
I think Kirk is interesting because he, like you said, he believes that the granddaughter is his granddaughter. So I think full-heartedly he assumes that Masha Agnes is the bloodline that he needs in order to kill his or delay his inevitable demise. And I think that's an interesting concept because that then gets to us to the potential fall finale maybe and have it go, oh my gosh, she's not your daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Because right now it just seems too easy. For this show, it definitely seems too easy.
Maybe. I think they're definitely playing with it though. Appreciate that. Thanks, John and John. Really do appreciate you toying with my emotions like that. If they would just say, yeah, he's definitely your dad, that would be super. That would be super.
The other thing that's interesting about Kirk is that now he's gone, right? Red lost the trail. So I'll be interested to find out what the story is that allows them to reconnect somehow to finding Agnes. Because at this point, trail's completely cold from a storyline writing perspective. Mm-hmm. So that'll be very interesting to see how Kirk and Agnes come back in. And so far, like you said, Agnes is part of the story, but we haven't seen the baby, which is a good thing. Although it is getting a little long in the tooth.
Yeah, we need to find Agnes. Hashtag find Agnes. They should change it to find Agnes right away. Like today. Let's get that over with.
If Cooper was running the show, he'd be like, get that damn baby here now.
Tom, let's move on to Tom. Okay, I really enjoyed the Keen's 11 caper. I thought that was really fun. And Tom getting the car, Liz pulling the old Liz, like I talked about, to get the information. The music was fantastic. I was really waiting for Clooney and Pitt to show up. So That whole thing, is that something you'd like to see more of? You would like to see more of Tom and Liz if they're going to be together, working together in this capacity?
Absolutely. I think it's fun. It's not really Mr. and Mrs. Smith, right? Because Mr. and Mrs. Smith were on opposite sides. But I like the fact that they're working together in a spy-type situation. That's a fun show. That whole scene, I was smiling the whole time that scene was going on. So absolutely give me more of that. That I can believe. I can't believe them playing house. But I could believe that 100% of the way.
I'm getting past it. I'm really trying to just get past it. I just family dynamics are part of the show. This is part of the show. They've kind of alluded to and connected a lot of these dots. So I'm okay with that. But this was really fun. I would like to see. I mean, I'm sure Redemption is going to be a lot of this. Actually, this kind of thing. And I love capers. Capers are a big they're a cinematic crack for me. I am automatically hooked when I see a caper. So this really feeds into that part of me that I am missing because I don't think we're getting a lot of heist movies. So if they can do more of that, I'm really excited. Mix that up with a lot of the darker aspects of the show, and I think you got an awesome mix.
I do too.
And we also get a lot of Jason Bourne-ness from Tom. I mean, he goes undercover, and it almost felt like another Redemption pilot, like I said.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's the guy. I mean, he seems like they are setting him up to go off on a redemption and just be an ass-kicking machine.
Which I love. I love Bad Tom.
Yeah, bedtime is fun. Bedtime is fun. He's got that whole hair thing going on where it's like all slicked back and looking all smoky and dark.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, mm-hmm. You okay, man? Because it sounds like you're having a moment. Mm-hmm. And, okay. Easy, killer. All right. Well, more my speed would be Liz. The journal's in Russian. Can she read Russian? We kind of talked about that, but I want to ask you. So do you think she's actually reading it or is she just translating it online?
Yeah, this is the part of the show where I was a little bit perplexed because I don't know how to interpret the scene as a viewer. So she's reading the journal, but yet it looks like she's watching her mother instead of reading the words. And because mm-hmm. of that, it's almost like she's trying to remember or dream sequence kind of thing. So I don't know if that was the best way to present the information. Maybe just could have flashbacked without Liz being part of the conversation where she kind of reaches out and touches her mom. I get that she's bonding with her mother for the first time in this book or whatever.
Understanding her mother, I think.
Understanding her mother. Yeah, probably. Yeah. And so it was just perplexing to know how much is believable, how much isn't believable, how much do we take at face value. So there's just a lot of complexity. So I don't know if it was the right way to present the information, but I'm going to just roll with it and see where it goes.
I actually liked it. I thought it was a nice visual motif. I like, you know,
shot for shot, directorially, it was great.
Mm-hmm.
Informationally, I just don't know if it was the best way for the audience to receive the information.
Is informationally a word?
It is now.
It is not a word. You can't just make up and throw words around. Ecclesiastical. Wait, that is a word. Never mind. Okay, here's my thing. I think cinematically it works beautifully. I think it's actually a nice... Television is a visual medium, so just somebody reading from a book is not going to be that exciting, even if it is in Katarina's voice. So to actually have it there and relate to the audience that this is the first time that she's understanding her mother, that she's getting close to her mother, that she's having some kind of a semblance of a relationship with her mother. I think that was actually a very solid choice to do it that way. So I am the opposite of you. I actually enjoyed it. I thought it was a really well done way to do it. Now, in terms of can you believe everything, that's where I get into a little bit of a debate, because as I said, why the hell would a spy keep a journal? That just seems like everything you can't do is a spy. Now, maybe she wanted to do it because she's a mom. Maybe she wanted to do it because she wanted to leave something for her baby if something happened to her to understand her situation and her plight. I guess there's something to be said for that. But it seems like a stretch. If she's such a good, smart, trained spy, why would she do that? And I still don't have a decision on that. I'm curious what our listeners would think. Because that is the one big sticking point to this whole thing, is why would a spy keep an actual journal other than a quick way to feed us the information? Story, a Chekhov's gun. I don't know.
Well, maybe it was her report log that she had to keep to get back to the KGB or S Directorate or whatever she was working for.
Maybe, or not Chekhov's gun, Deus Ex Machina.
Right.
Basically a plot point that's dropped in that explains everything and solves the problem. You know, unless it's that, it doesn't really, it confuses me. I'm not saying it's not possible. It just, at this point, confuses me. I try to give them the benefit of the doubt because it is only episode three. So mm-hmm. we've got a lot more to go, and that might be explained down the road why she would keep a journal. So we'll find out. But we got some real tangible facts, we think, from this journal. Are you ready to hear them? We're going to revisit them a little bit. Seeing Masha with Konstantin reminds, and that's how she said it, Konstantin, not Konstantin, Konstantin, reminds me of my own father. And she says, look at me, in love with a man I was meant to seduce, an American. Raymond wants me to run. Take Masha. But how could I do that to her? She's my entire life. She's everything. Now, you would allude from that, you would take in from that, that meant she would leave Konstantin.
Right. But the thing is I love the line, but how could I do that to her? I was mm-hmm. waiting for her to say, but how could I do that to him?
Mm-hmm.
If she says, but how could I do that for him? Then she clearly loves Konstantin. But in this case, it seems like Konstantin's not really in the picture.
Yep.
The other one that was really interesting was the reminds me of my own father.
Mm-hmm.
Is she scared of her own father? did something happen with her father? There's some open questions there I have based on that.
No, well, she says seeing Masha with Constantine reminds me of my own father, and we met her father last season.
Correct. Last season, right? Yeah, Dom, okay. Yep.
Yep. So I don't know. That seems to me that she's saying they have a loving relationship at the time that she's writing this. So they seem like they're having a loving relationship. Or Constantine is faking a loving relationship. I don't know which one that would be. And but there's definitely, I think she's alluding to that based on the way it was presented, which again is a visual medium. It was a visual form of storytelling that took place. It came across to me as that was a positive thing.
Agree, but what it doesn't say is Constantine's the father. Constantine could be just her, Constantine could be her brother.
Whoa. You know what? Stop making weird stuff. Constantine is her husband. They have said that. That is 100% already said. Don't start throwing in crazy ass theories just to get people talking again.
Until Kaplan says Constantine is Masha's husband, I don't believe any of it. Because everybody I heard it from lies all the time.
Something's so wrong with you, man. Something's so wrong with you.
Because she says, look at me. I'm in love with a man I was meant to seduce. She doesn't say that I'm in love with Constantine. I'm in love with Raymond.
Mm-hmm.
She's not in love with Constantine. Doesn't mean that they were ever married. Doesn't mean that they were ever husband and wife this passage.
They've said it. Shh. I'm going to beat you. The listeners are going to beat you before I even get a chance. So there you go. Liz says, Reddington didn't just have an affair with my mother. She was assigned to him to be in his life the same way you were assigned to be in mine. That's what she says to Tom. Ouch.
Hmm.
But they also fell in love, had a baby. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
See the connection? I'm not saying there's a connection, but could be a connection.
You just said there was a connection.
No, I just said there could be.
So did you see there was a connection?
Did you see the connection that I might have seen? I'm just saying, sounds similar in a way. Even though they've said that it's not the case, I'm getting a whole lot of believes and nobody's confirming Kirk. It's pissing me off. So come on. So I got to go with something. I got to get something going. It definitely ain't my mom.
I did like that scene, though. It was sweet between the two of them.
It was very, very sweet, actually. Yeah. Even though I've never been a fan of them getting back together, I do think they're having some sweet moments. And maybe it'll work out. Who knows? Today, the doctors confirmed our worst fears. Constantine is going to need blood transfusions to raise his blood count. Sounds like she cares about her husband.
Sounds like she cares about her brother.
I hope the writers hear you and they're just taking whatever they're listening on and they're throwing it across the room. Like, God, why would he say something so stupid?
Because they're paying me. They're paying me to make diversions so people don't believe anything.
Nobody's paying you. If they are, can you give me a check? Because that would be great. The only blessing is that this is passed from father to son and that Masha is safe. That right there, that, my friend, alludes to Masha is his daughter.
Oh, it doesn't.
Yeah, it does. How does it not? The only blessing is that this disease is passed from father to son and that Masha is safe. Father to son. So because she's his daughter, she's safe.
Well, yeah.
It does allude to that. It does allude to that.
It alludes to it depending on whose point of view the writing is coming from. Because again, the journal was found with Kirk at where Kirk was staying at the Summer Palace. It doesn't mean that the journal was actually Katarina's.
That's true. Doesn't mean that it is Katarina's. But if you take it at face value, that is what it alludes to.
Okay.
That maybe even Katarina thinks that Masha is hers.
Is Constantine's. Right, correct. Yeah. Yeah. But then she tears up. That's the question. Why does she cry? Is Masha not safe?
It's imaginary. It's not like she wrote down, I'm crying right now.
But they
that's
showed,
just how
but,
Liz sees it.
But they showed her pause, and they showed her cry from a visual delivery perspective.
From Liz's perspective of reading it, that's how she perceived her mother is writing it. It's not like we actually saw a flashback. There's no way in hell that would be in the journal or in Liz's mind.
That's why I said that the way they constructed the information delivery was different. Because the first thing that I popped into my head when she started crying was, it's a good thing that this has passed from father to son and that Masha is safe. And then she like starts crying and I was like, ooh, maybe Masha has the illness. Maybe that's the whole warrior gene thing. Maybe the warrior gene comes back into play. And because of the warrior gene, then the illness can pass from male to female. Maybe Masha has the illness too. That was the first thing that popped in my head.
No, I got the crying thing because the day the doctors confirmed our worst fear is that Constantine's going to need this blood transfusion. That's all.
But she doesn't start crying until after she says Masha's safe, and then she pauses and looks up, and there's tears in her eyes.
Because she's looking right at her, in her Liz's mind, she's looking right at her daughter, so they're looking at each other, they're wistful, they're sad, they're...
But she's not there.
Right, but they're seeing, she's imagining this moment. This is the fake moment. You can't base anything on a fake moment. Or it's not real.
Or is this the singular moment that she goes, oh crap, she's not safe because Constantine is going to need her blood and bone marrow and stuff. And this is when she first hatches the plan to get rid of, you know, have Red take care of her.
That might be possible. Maybe. I guess if you're taking an imaginary moment as fact, then sure, that makes sense.
They presented it to me on screen from the director and writer's point of view. That means I'm supposed to learn something from that scene. That's all I'm saying.
That's an interesting point that maybe she could see that maybe Masha, she says it out loud and she's like, well, no, she's not, because that's going to be her. He's going to use her to save himself. Maybe, I guess. And the apparently trying to touch her imaginary mama was an interesting moment. And that's pretty much it with Liz. She really has, would you agree, for the first three episodes, become the Liz that Megan alluded to in her interview, where she's very self-dependent. She's no longer being saved every 5 minutes. I mean, she's really become her own dynamic, her own character.
100% agree.
Yep. I really like what they're doing with her. She's really changed a lot of people. I've seen people whose minds have changed just from the Megan Boone interview, but also from these first couple episodes. I've seen people that were not a fan the last couple of years because they thought she waffled a little too much or whatever, and they've really come around and really enjoyed what they've done with the character this season. So I'm glad to see that has turned a corner. Now, Red, the concierge of crime, and also the spy who stayed out in the cold. And I want to mention this because I think it's probably relevant. It's probably not, but that's just how I saw it. When Red is talking to Miles McGrath, and Miles says, concierge of crime, the spy who stayed out in the cold, and Red said that he hadn't heard that one before, and he references the Le Carre novel. Well, that novel is actually the spy who came in from the cold, about a possible defector, where the spy who stayed out in the cold was actually a book about a double agent, Robert Hansen. So I don't know if that was just a play on the original book, like just a play on the words because he stayed out and he didn't come in, or if they're actually, if Red got the reference wrong and Miles was actually referring to the double agent book.
I think that maybe it was the other way, like Miles was trying to get a dig in on him, like, oh, the spy who stayed on the cold, and Reverend's like, haven't heard of that one.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's like, but we got to get the Le Carre novel, because he's trying to put it back to him, like, I'm not the one that stays out of the cold. It's like a double throwback, like, you dig on me, I dig on you.
Could be. I just thought it's an important distinction because they are two separate books and they do refer similarly but differently, because Robert Hansen was a double agent. He was an American double agent. So mm-hmm. that's interesting. He meets Liz at Keene's grave, which I thought was pretty funny. It's a nice touch.
Location of the meet is great. Conversation mm-hmm. was a little flat, I thought.
Well, you're really having a problem with this episode, aren't you? She's like a bitter Betty.
She faked her death. He mourned her loss, and there's not a bigger conversation about it, especially after last week's I'm done with you, roll up the window and drive away. You think there'd be a little bit more animation in this scene.
I agree with that. That was an opportunity, I think. I don't want to say missed, because I don't know what they're going to do. It might be coming. But I do say, and we said this before, the one thing that should happen is Liz should demand an answer, and Red should clarify, just to put everybody on the same page. Like, at this point, I don't want to say I'm frustrated, because frustrated implies that I'm not enjoying the show. And I am enjoying the show. I still love the show. I think we're having a great season, honestly. But I do think at some point it starts to stretch the line of credibility if nobody is demanding something at this point.
Especially when she's got the diary written right in front of her. It's like, did you know about this?
Mm-hmm.
Like, she should be more animated in her questioning to Red at the end of the episode, too.
Yeah. That is one thing where I get why there's some concerns about that. But I also say, you know what? I always let it play out. I always try to let it play out and see where it ends up, because the things that have bothered me in the past generally were resolved.
Correct.
Going down the road, and were resolved in a positive fashion, like where I was like, yeah, I knew I should have waited for that. And that's what I'm doing, because it is TV and they're not going to give you everything in the first few episodes. They're playing the long game, so to speak. And that's what is going on here. So we'll see what happens. We did get Brimley. We got Brimley back. You love Brimley.
Love Brimley.
What the hell was he doing, man? What was he doing to that guy?
I have no idea. I had to double check, too, to see if it was Brimley. It didn't look like he had his full oxygen tank stash and stuff on him. So, yeah, I have to replay that scene again. I wasn't quite sure what he was trying to attempt to do.
Maybe I was a little strung out from all the Westworld we've been watching, but it looked like they were spraying milk on him. I'm like, is he a host? What's going on? I don't know what's going on with this.
That was the first thing that popped in my head, too. What is it with that white stuff?
What is it? Yeah, I didn't know exactly what that was. And that was kind of funny. I'm like, I don't know exactly what kind of torture it is, but it looks delicious. That's what it looks like. So did you notice that Red at this point started a story and then gave up on it in that call?
He totally did.
That was like, no, wonderful.
I was like, write it down. Red's Redder coming up here. No, nope.
Loved it. All right. Now we're off to the races. Red explains Kirk's motives. The Hrabowski virus will stave off his aplastic anemia. It creates a form of leukemia. Basically, it has the opposite effect that his disease has.
It's simple math, really.
Yeah, it's simple math, really. Rare blood disorder, and the key to his cure is a biological donation from the woman he believes to be his biological daughter. And Mr. Spader could not emphasize that word enough. I mean, it was just basically, I was waiting for, you know, those Facebook videos where people hold up the signs of the words. I was waiting for that, where he believes, and then he pulls up the card. See, guys, that he to be his biological daughter. That is intentional. That is totally meant to piss all of us off. And I respect it. I respect it quite a bit. This isn't going to be, this isn't about saving you for me. It's about saving you for him. Love that line.
It's about saving you for him.
That's what I said.
Yeah, you didn't emphasize it in the right way. I was just correct. Well,
sorry, Dad. I'll go back to my room and I'll come out and try again.
You know it.
So, what did you think? I mean, about this moment that you've got all that information in that block. What did you take away from it?
I was like, oh, thanks for confirming what we already knew.
So you didn't feel like it was any revelation in this moment?
No, not really.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, we said it last season, right? Look, he's getting a blood transfusion. Oh, he needs Liz to get her blood for some reason. We get the reason, which is nice, because Red says and confirms it, what the reason is. But at the same time, it's not like this is new information to most Blacklist viewers.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But it was good. At least something's confirmed. We've got some answers. That we were promised some answers this season. We're getting them. Are we getting them as fast as I'm sure we would like? Probably not, but we are getting some, and it is answering some of the
questions. I don't know if it's the pace that bothers me. It's if this is an answer, it's the delivery. It's the way I'm getting the answer isn't what I was playing it up to be in my mind.
So it's your expectation, too.
My expectation. It is not living up to my expectation, and that is my own fault. I'm not saying that's the fault of the writers. I'm saying that's my own fault for having such high expectations.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm fine with most of it, except for the believes, because at this point, I would be smacking the crap out of somebody and saying, is he or is he not my papa?
I'd be jumping over the thing. You jump over the thing, the book falls off the table, lands in a bucket of water, and the whole thing is ruined, and then you'd be like, oh, come on! That would be so much more interesting.
That's totally, totally what would happen in my life, yeah.
Absolutely.
All in all, fun episode. We didn't get a whole lot of the answers that we don't kind of like Strike Troy alluded to. We kind of already thought most of this stuff. We didn't really get anything that we didn't know, but we did get some stuff confirmed, or we think is confirmed. Although the journal, I'm really curious about listeners. What do you think? Do you think that was planted, or do you think it's legitimate? Because I still don't get why a spy would write a journal. I just don't get it.
And more importantly, as much as we, you know, don't want the baby on the show, I'm still very worried for Agnes, because she's with those two Russian creepy dudes and it was Naomi, right? Not Naomi. I forget her name. Romina. Romina was the lady's name.
Matos.
Henchwoman. Yeah.
Henchwoman.
Henchwoman.
Right.
So I'm afraid for Agnes's safety. I don't want Agnes back. Yeah. I'm just afraid for Agnes's safety.
Well, don't say that. See, I do want Agnes back, and I want that resolved. The one thing, and I said this last season, I'm not going to shy away from it, I was worried about with the baby is that we were going to have a whole bunch of episodes about saving the baby. I just knew that was going to be a factor. So far, I get it. Like, the first two are about saving Liz, and then now we're, you know, hopefully we'll have... Here's what I will say. The Liz storyline got resolved very quickly. Way quicker than I thought it was going to be. I thought we were going to be searching for Liz for quite some time.
They always give you the answers right away. Remember, that was your saying. So are you?
That was my saying.
You're surprised it wasn't resolved quickly?
I was, because that was really a story element I thought would be dragged out. It just seemed like this is a perfect 8-episode arc, and that's what they're going to do. Is like, okay, these first 8 episodes are getting to Liz. I would understand that. Using blacklisters to get to Liz. I would get that. Now I think we're using them to get to Agnes, and I think that'll probably be resolved fairly quickly as well. I think they seem to be doing that fairly quickly. Now, I don't think Kirk's going to get resolved quickly, but I think we'll get Agnes quicker than we think, because they tend to do that. They tend to move a lot faster than I, not necessarily with the big questions that everybody thinks is going to, they're not going to answer some of those for quite a while. But like these little things, like getting Agnes back and stuff like that, I think that'll be resolved quicker than we think.
All right.
I hope so. Otherwise, we might have a different conversation next week.
Well, here's a weird thought for you. So remember...
Is it about a brother again? Because I'm not listening to that nonsense.
Well, depending on who you think Scotty's brother is. But the question is, where... Kirk hired Scotty, Susan Hargrave, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a possibility that maybe the Russians and Romina are somehow taking them to Scotty? Maybe Scotty's still involved in some angle.
Well, I mean, yeah, because you do got to think at some point they are going to connect back to Scotty, because it's going to lead to the spinoff, right? But here's the one.
I mean, that kid is her granddaughter, technically.
That's true. But she doesn't know that, right?
But she doesn't know that.
Yeah, but she doesn't know that. So I don't know why, I don't know if they're going to play that up or not. We don't know where that's going to play. Here's the thing. As much as I do want to see where the spinoff goes, I don't want to be thinking about it this whole Blacklist season.
Right.
That's a separate entity as far as I'm concerned. So I don't think it's going to be a huge factor. No. Well, I think maybe on that final episode, wherever they lead into that spinoff, but that's about it.
And it's weird because John said you should be able to pick up the spinoff and watch the spinoff as if you've never seen the Blacklist and vice versa.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But at the same time, it is part of the giant Blacklist universe. And they said they would have some crossover potential concepts. Mm-hmm. So you have to kind of think, well, how would this be a concept that they could play off of in the other show? So even though you don't have to think about it, you kind of do have to think about it at the same time, now that you've already been invested as a Blacklist watcher as part of the greater universe.
Maybe I have to think about that, but I never have to think about your stupid brother theory again. That's one thing. I'm done. Because that's dumb. It's just you dumb. All right. The show's not over, so don't go anywhere. But please remember to download the Blacklist Expose app for iOS and Android. And be sure to go even deeper in the mystery of Red Reddington by visiting our partner Blacklist site, theblacklistnbc.com. We'll be back with Red's Rhetoric right after this.
What if you could live your life without limits, where every desire you ever imagined could be fulfilled? This fall, experience Westworld, a show where every human's dark side will be revealed. After watching each episode, listen to Beyond Westworld, a podcast featuring humans and hosts from around the park diving deep into HBO's illustrative narrative. Every hero has a code, and so do you. Download your itinerary and the show at beyondwestworldpodcast.com or your podcast app of choice.
Welcome to Red's Rhetoric, that part of the show where we play two scenes from the past week's episode, and then you get to vote which you think is the best one over at theblacklistexposed.com. Just look for the post for Miles McGrath. Last week, you apparently didn't heed my warning either, like Aaron, as 70% would love that free acre of land, headshot or not. This week, our first clip comes when Red talks to Johan.
Sounds like Martin and Lewis.
Who?
Three Ring Circus, The Stooge, Sailor Beware, Martin and Lewis.
The hell are you talking about?
Partnerships are very rough.
Hmm.
You know, B.J. Simpson and I started a lawn mowing business in the summer of 72, bagging, hedging, the whole ball of wax. One day, I'm out rototilling Pat Hunt's garden. I go in for a bottle of pop, must have been 110. And there's BJ in the sunken living room, shoes off, feet up on the couch, eating a fried bologna sandwich, watching Mike Douglas. Mike Douglas, can you imagine? I quit that day.
Who are Martin and Lewis?
Point is, I haven't had a partner since.
Lucky man. Guy I'm in bed with is nuts. Kill one of my best men.
Johan, you should walk away. I'd help you out if I could offer a man, but this sounds like a mess, a real mess. I am so sorry.
Our second clip comes when Red gives Liz a little backstory.
Kirk is dying, and the Hrabowski virus is a temporary antidote to what afflicts him.
Hrabowski virus, that's what? Sample 17, isn't that a class A toxin? How's it going to help him?
He is aplastic anemia. A systemic failure to produce viable bone marrow cells. It's been a death sentence for generations of men in his family, except a distant uncle who had contracted the Hrabowski virus. After getting the virus, the uncle lived longer than any other Rostov with the blood disease.
So Kirk wanted the virus to recreate what happened to his uncle?
Yes. It's a simple math problem, really. Kirk's disease prevents his body from producing enough blood cells. The Hrabowski virus results in a rare form of leukemia, which creates the opposite problem, too many blood cells.
So he's going to give himself leukemia. Isn't that going to kill him?
Eventually, but by offsetting his blood disease, he buys himself a few more precious years.
No one could be that desperate.
But he is that desperate, Elizabeth, because he no longer has you. You wanted to know why he went so far to find you, why there seemed to be nothing he wouldn't do to physically get hold of you. Now you know. He needs a biological descendant to save his life, a genetic donation from the woman he believes to be his long-lost daughter. That's what you are to him, a collection of cells. This isn't about saving you from me. This is about saving you for him.
Which was your favorite this week? If you once started a lawn mowing business, vote red partner. Or if you would inject yourself with leukemia, vote red toxin.
And now we move on to Special Agent Intel. First up, all the way from Brazil, it is Vanessa. My thoughts after tonight's episode. Katarina approached Red to get information since she was a naval officer. They fell in love. But Constantine found out and tried to do something against Katarina and Masha, which made Red run away and get into the criminal world to protect her. And when he could not, to protect Masha. Also could be Katarina got what she needed and framed Red for it. Ooh. And he had to go on the run. My mind is just blowing. Can't even make myself clear, but yeah.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of fits in with the timeline. Could it be she was there to seduce, then she falls in love, Masha's with them, and I'm trying to reread that part you said, which made Red run away, something that they did. Constantine found a way and tried to do something against him in the criminal world to protect her. I like that concept, that Red would actually have to go and be a spy himself in order to protect Katarina and the baby, and then we get to that whole Night of the Fire thing, and that's where I think that Liz shot Red. Yeah, that's interesting. I like that. That's really cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like it too. I like it a lot.
All right. Michelle wrote in, said, boring episode, Thursday overall, but always enjoy Brimley torturing some poor soul.
With milk, apparently. Got milk.
Yeah. Do you agree with Samar's response to Liz? Her flippant, weak apology doesn't cut it for the hell she put everyone through. Even Aram let her know what she did was not okay. Ready to move off how the blacklist turns and get back to the great show it used to be and not the Keen show. Get rid of Tom and the baby.
Wow. Wow.
I love that, how the blacklist turns. That's funny.
Well, maybe Tom will take the baby to redemption. Who knows? Who knows? And the doc is back. Doc H says, that was more like it. Wait, are we completely on opposite? We're just going on opposite ends here. That was more like it. A season premiere quality episode. Now it feels like the blacklist is back to true form. This episode had a pivotal bad guy. the task force headquarters was relevant again, screwing things up, then eventually rectifying their errors, like I assume our regular government does. Red apparently handed Liz most of the missing pieces to her backstory, and we find out that Constantine is like Fat Bastard from Austin Powers fame. Yum, baby, the other white meat. Get in my belly! Samara seemed to have quietly... I really didn't see where Fat Bastard was coming from, but now I get it. Samara seemed to have quietly reversed her alienation with her colleagues, then got her comeuppance in the closing phone call scene with Rom. I have to give this episode a rating of 9 naked nubile shower buddies out of 10. Okay. You can tell Rom is an IT nerd and not a jock. A jock would have told Samara to come over because he needed a second shower buddy to help out.
Wow.
That's just gross. All right, my favorite segment was the Tom and Liz tag team act to secure the access key card, I think we all agree, and the evidence she needed to see. They worked well together in this mini scam. It reminded me of other slick cons like the Thomas Crown Affair and The Sting, or Ocean's 11.
Yes.
Because that music was totally right from
Ocean's 11, yep.
My least favorite bit is seeing Kaplan dragged around on a drop cloth through the forest. My brain immediately screamed, Carl from Sling Blade. I can only imagine the first word she hears after she comes around will be, let me see if I can do this right. I like them French broad taters.
That was pretty good. Much better than your singing.
Mm-hmm.
Baricel says, okay, if I were Liz, I would seriously be questioning my psyche right now. It's one thing to think about your mother. It's something else entirely when you have her completely envisioned in your mind to the point where she is speaking to you and you reach out and touch her. But anyway, love the episode. The Tom and Liz con was my favorite part, although I don't quite understand how Aram has a girlfriend since I'm 99.9% sure he's been flirting with Navabi in his nice guy way for over 2 seasons.
Mm-hmm. He moved on. Mm-hmm. Kara Adler. So in the scene in the cemetery, was it just me or did it look like Liz did that odd expression Red does with his chin twice? You can see him do it just before he tells her yes about the leads. I noticed that back in season 2, Red has done it as a stalling tick when he looks like he's not wanting to let info go. Mostly when he lets Liz assume something and lets her run down a path. Now Liz is doing it. Tempted to rewatch and see if she picked it up from recent proximity or if she has done it before. That's interesting.
Yeah, I think she's trying to allude to the whole father-daughter connection thing there.
What? I don't think so. That's not what she means, is it? I believe that's not the case.
But I hope that it's the proximity thing, because I know when I go down to Texas and visit my cousins down there, I always come back like Whataburger, 35W, like all those southern accents after you spend a week down there. You totally pick it up from proximity. So I'm going with proximity.
I would pay large sums of money to hear you do a southern accent for the entire show.
Be kind of
seriously,
tough.
Can they do a Patreon for that? Because I would pay for that. I would.
No. Crystal, I thought it was a good episode overall. I didn't like how it seemed slow to roll out the mission of the Blacklister, but rushed at the end of the episode. She didn't like that. I thought Tom shined in the episode with his ability to take on an identity. I really didn't like how we didn't get to see the reaction to Liz from Cooper. That's a good point. We didn't bring that up. I hope we get to see more of that. I really want to know why the whole time Katerina wrote her journals, she looked upset and almost scared. I agree. She kept looking around like she would hear something. I really still enjoyed the episode, and I hope the search for baby Agnes is over soon.
I think we covered that. The Cooper thing, you're right, we didn't bring that up. He didn't really react to it.
They never crossed paths. Maybe that's all it was. They just never were in the same place, same time.
It's true. And he's trying to get the job done. He's too busy yelling at Red.
Although she is standing there next to Aram during the train heist scene, and Cooper's there like, where's the train?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he does yell at her at one point. Can't get on the damn phone. Yep. Maybe they'll bring that up later. We'll see. Wendy, I think they're going to have a private moment. I think their moment will be very private.
Well, it would absolutely have to be private, but you think they would have done it in this episode before they went back to work.
There's so much going on. I don't know. We'll see. Maybe he's trying to find her baby first, and then when everything settles, then they'll have a discussion.
Don't you ever damn do that to me again!
Yeah, we haven't heard about Charlene this season yet either, I don't think.
We have not.
Wendy Davies, I liked the episode. It was a mellower pace than the last two. I'm going to have to watch it a third time. Now I have got the subtitles. There were a couple things said that made me say, huh? So I want to check those out first before I commit. Great to see another beloved character, Brimley, show up. And then we now need Glenn. I agree, we need Glenn. Also, Aram got the girl. Yeah, he did.
Got
and
a girl.
The best date ever.
No. Aram got a girl. Didn't get the girl. He got a girl.
Hey, look, I'm not taking anything away from Samar, but I saw the girl, Elise, and he got the girl. She's okay. She'll do. He did all right, is what I'm saying. Best date ever. So did Harold set them up like Red asked him to? Oh
yeah. That's right.
She's a very attractive woman and seems like a lot of fun because she's willing to just improvise.
So if Cooper set up Aram and Elise, then the question is where did Cooper meet Elise?
Mm-hmm. Mm. Well, I mean, they're obviously fitness buffs, so probably running at some point or a class or something. I'm sure it's something to do with fitness. He cares about his body, and so does she, obviously.
Speed dating.
And he cares about her body, too.
Maybe he broke up with Charlene, and he was at a speed dating thing, and, oh, you're nice. I should introduce you to my friend.
Sometimes you take theories too far. Continue.
Julie said, a lot of info in this week's episode. Most interesting part to me is the interpretation of the journal. Katerina confesses she is in love with a man she was sent to seduce and betray, an American. Raymond wants me to run, take Masha, and disappear with him. It's so cleverly worded. Who is him, Raymond or the American? Mm. Or are they the same person? I tend to think there is someone else in this web that we haven't been made aware of yet. Too many what ifs. I thoroughly enjoyed this week's episode, although more Red and less Tom would have been better. I like Tom.
I don't. I like Tom too. I like it better when it's not Tom and Liz.
Exactly. This week changed that perception.
Yeah, I thought they worked really well together. They made a good team. Julie is trying to make Katerina a hoe. That's what I'm getting. A
lot of people think she's a hoe.
Man, poor thing. She's like, it could be like this other guy's kid and this other guy. I'm like, well, how many people is she shacking up with here? I mean,
how many people was she sent to seduce and betray before she landed on Reddington as her final one?
You do what you can for your government. That's what I say. TC Casa, does anyone else find themselves more invested in the Kaplan Red story than the Liz Kirk story? I fully understand the importance of the Liz Kirk story, and I love how we are getting more and more hints each week, but I'm so curious to see what Kaplan will do next. I think she was willing to do anything, clearly, to save Liz from Red before Red shot her. Now I think she will go even further to prevent Red from having his way in Lizzie's life. Plus, she may want some revenge as well. Anyone more invested? I think more invested in the sense that it's a newer development where the Liz and Kirk story has been going on for a while. So I see where you're coming from. I don't know if I'm more invested. I just, it's a newer, fresher tweak to the story.
The thing that I want to bring up here is that maybe my frustration with getting the information delivered to us from the journal perspective is exactly because of that. I was more invested in the Kaplan Red story, and because of the way that was going, and because it was so awesomely told to me in the promo that it was going to be something big this week.
God, man, will you let it go? Will you frozen the hell out of that?
God. That I wanted the in my mind, again, I made this up, right? My expectation, so it's my fault. But my expectation would be that we would learn about the relationship and all of the backstory through the Kaplan and Red relationship and that healing itself. Or not healing itself, right?
Right. 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 Troy. Right.
Exactly.
Right. Right.
So,
Alex.
This one's mine. Alexandra said, this episode was kind of slow. And seriously, who's doing these promos? Why get everybody so riled up about a storyline that's non-existent in the episode?
I'm fine. I've moved on, but apparently Troy's still got a problem.
And Alexandra has too. So I love you, Alexandra. Thank you. Anyway, I don't, not like in a, you know, way. I have a wife, but don't come knocking. Anyway,
that's something I would say. I respect it. Oh, that's funny.
Anyway, I don't buy it. As someone above me who pointed out the words of American and Raymond was very careful. Also, she was a professional spy, writing in a diary. She knew she'd be leaving with Kirk after she ran. Mm-hmm. The whole thing can be fake, written for his benefit.
Mm-hmm.
Especially since the one thing I'm sure of now is that Kirk is not the father, which I thought, well, was hoping and praying for the sake of the show anyway. So yay, but Katerina would have known. So the Masha safe part of the diary screams fake to me.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it paints a very banal, uninteresting, weak image of Katerina. This was a woman Red Reddington admired. She must have been impressive. Not this, oh, I should spy, but I'm in love, and there's this big bad husband to run from mess. Now, posing as a weak mess of a woman for Kirk's benefit, that would have been something smart to do.
Agreed.
They're making Samar an iceberg again. I don't like it. The rest was uneventful. I really hope they won't stretch this out for 8 episodes.
She has more.
Oh, she does.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron.
Yeah.
Talking to you.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, I thought... Never mind. Aaron, I have a question for you. You were very...
Yes, Alexander. Can I just refer to you as Alexander? Because that would be fun.
Sure. Aaron.
How you doing?
I have a question for you. You were very adamant, as you often are.
And I cook, too.
I agree with that. About Red being a bad, bad, bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder, I wonder not being...
you don't do it right. Mm-hmm.
There you go.
I want some fried taters. Mm-hmm.
All right. Here's a question. I wonder, not being in that camp myself, where does that put him in your opinion in comparison to other characters on the show?
Tom is bad. Just take them one by one. Tom is bad. I think he's a dad, so I always give dads a pass if they're trying to do right by their kids. He seems like he's doing right. He's trying to make amends. Yes, but he also is a woman hitter. I have a hard time ever getting past that. So yes, he's a bad man, but I do enjoy watching his character.
All right. Liz, the Harbor Master. Same principle as blaming Red for all Kaplan does from this point that you suggested.
No, not bad. Caught in a horrible situation, has had her life thrust into a lot of bad things. She has done bad things, but not a bad person.
Okay. What about Aunt Connolly? Shooting Connolly. Correct.
Yeah. Shooting Connolly was a bad thing. And yes, it was wrong, but I don't think Liz is a bad person. No.
Okay. Cooper, he did some bad things covering up for Irene.
Yeah, Cooper, I actually remember I had that theory that maybe Cooper is ultimately behind what happened to Red. So I'm hoping that Cooper is actually a bad guy. But at this point, no, I think he's a good man until they show us otherwise.
Kaplan doing all the cleaning and covering up for Red's crimes?
Yes, she's a bad person who does loyal criminal work. But she's a bad person. She's not a hero.
Dembe blindly helping Red with everything?
Bad person, but he's awesome, so I don't care.
How about Kirk? You said he was evil.
Yep.
Is that a different level or on the same boat?
I don't know how different it is yet because it hasn't been more clearly defined, but it seems like he's a selfish, evil man. And when he was referring to Red, he was really talking about himself. So it seems like he's more evil.
Okay. And the Blacklisters themselves, is he the same as the guy who killed hundreds to find a cure for his son? Or the woman who kept unwanted children and let them die happy by killing them?
I think, yes, he's just as bad. Red is a self... I mean, yes, he is doing things for Liz, and he seems to care about Liz, but he's also done a lot of selfish acts, and he's killed a lot of people for selfish reasons, and that is... he's flat-out murder. That's a bad, bad, mad man.
Which is exactly what Frederick Barnes and Lady Ambrosia were doing in those two situations. They were selfish in their drives in order to get to the ultimate conclusion.
Yeah, you can like a character and they can be an awful person. I liked Walter White. He was an awful human being.
That he is. I don't mean to be aggressive. I'm just genuinely interested in where and how one draws the line between good and bad guys from that viewpoint, since I don't seem to share it, no matter how many times you tell us.
I think for me, a bad guy is drawn when they consistently do awful things to people in their own self-interest. That is a bad person to me. Liz's actions were not, I don't think, actions from a bad person. They were actions from a distraught person under emotional turmoil. That's different to me. I think Red is a bad, bad man. Now, did he used to be a good man and he was driven bad? Absolutely. I think that's possible based on what we know, but he's still a bad man.
All right.
That's what I think. Kim Malam Cameron, a couple points. I want to wrap Kaplan up, take her to the ER, and then send this poor woman away to the exotic island of her choice. She deserves a lifelong margarita. All right. Number two, I like the Tom and Liz dynamic as partners. Too often, show writers go for the lower level drama of a couple's in a screaming match when facing personal trauma. The Search for Agnes shows two parents serving as friends and partners in their search for the writing, coupled with Ryan and Megan's portrayals were fantastic. 3, Diego delivers even with a small amount of screen time given to him. I agree. He did well with what little he had this week. 4, Samar and the Betrayal. Seriously. Come on, guys. She's been part of Mossad. I'm sure this character has been able to compartmentalize her personal feelings while still doing a job. Fish a cup bait before the storyline gets old fast. Whoa.
Oh, she did. Right. She asked for a transfer. Even though she doesn't work for the FBI.
5, Aram. Love the actor and the fact he has moved on from this puppy crush. And he's a player. A damn. Am I right? James, as always, is fascinating to watch and listen to. Loved this episode.
There you go.
All right.
Nate, last one. This episode was stellar. I'm glad that we received some of Kirk's motivation. Tom was awesome. I can't wait to see what future missions he will engage in. I'm happy that Liz is standing up for herself. It will make sense when she finally walks away from Red. I'm starting to dislike Red, though. I think he wants Liz to hate him and forever walk away. That's interesting.
That is interesting.
I'm starting to dislike Red. I think Red wants Liz to hate him and forever walk away. I don't know if I agree with that.
I don't either, but I mean, there are people that would do that. I've done that in my life, so I get it.
Wouldn't he have been trying a lot harder 3 seasons ago?
Maybe, but he's also very angry right now. So, and he's hurt.
And wounded. Maybe Nate's referring to it in the current context, like immediately right now.
Could be.
Okay. He needs to be a big boy and realize he's a danger to Liz and Agnes. Mm-hmm. That he is. The way Red is keeping Liz in the dark about his plans to get Agnes only proves that Liz was right to fake her death.
Agreed.
The Agnes MacGuffin is interesting, but could get dull fast. Agree. Overall, great episode.
I love the Agnes MacGuffin. I am using that a lot at some point. All right, guys, that's going to conclude, I think. I think we great feedback, by the way. Great feedback from
great
everybody.
Insights.
Yeah. That's going to conclude this episode. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at @TheBlacklistGSM, where we live tweet during the East Coast feed, and use the show's hashtag, TheBlacklist.
Don't forget to follow us on Tumblr, Instagram, and also join the Facebook group. It's growing every day. Just search for The Blacklist Exposed. Talk about the show, the podcast, or, you know, give us an idea of where we can find a marinara buddy.
Just make fun of Troy. That's really all I ask. You can also subscribe to the podcast in iTunes. Please leave us a review, especially if you're new to the show or listen from the website. But if you're really on the go, make sure you download our app for iOS and Android, powered by Spreaker. You will also find all the intel analysis about this episode 4, Miles McGrath, by visiting theblacklistexposed.com. Big thanks for listening. Don't forget to answer our profiling question. Why was Katerina so sad?
Yeah.
In that imaginary clip.
That they purposely showed to us.
He's really hung up on this, guys. Come on, give him some good answers.
All right, thanks so much for listening. We'll see you next week. Until next time, I'm Agent Troy Heinrichs. That's at Troy Heinrichs on Twitter. And if you want to learn more about me, just visit, about.me/Troy Heinrichs.
And I'm Agent Aaron Peterson. You can hear me talking about movies and TV on the Hollywood Outsider podcast, as well as Remake This Movie Right. We are available at thehollywoodoutsider.com or on Twitter at @H_Outsider. Be sure to subscribe, download the app, submit your feedback, but most importantly, keep yourself off of
the blacklist.
The Blacklist Exposed is a Golden Spiral Media production. Find more of our great podcasts at goldenspiralmedia.com/podcasts.